Okay, here's 1 Timothy 2 and 12. I wanted to give you all a general idea of what this verse says. It prohibits someone from doing something to someone else for a specified reason. Now, we're going to break that down, but to make sense of it, we need to skip it and come back to it, at least in my mind. So, let's go to verse 13 and 14. The theological reasoning provided by Paul for the prohibition in verse 12 occurs here. So I want to explain that because we all can see in verse 12 there's some kind of prohibition. And then 13 and 14 explains the theological reasoning to support it. So I want to tell you what that is first, and then we'll go back and break down verse 12. Here we go. Gnosticism says, Eve preceded Adam, gave him life. Paul says Adam was formed first, then Eve. Gnosticism says Eve was not deceived. Paul says it was the woman who was deceived. Gnosticism says Eve wisely ate the fruit that imparted knowledge. Paul says the woman fell into transgression. All right, let's look at this in a chart form. Maybe it'll be easier. Eve was formed first. Paul says Adam was formed first. Eve was not deceived. Paul says Eve was deceived. Eve wisely ate the fruit. Paul says Eve transgressed eating the fruit. You saw that. I quoted the book where this came from, Gnostic Teachings and the Alien God. All right, so if you look at a prohibition in verse 12, here is the theological reasoning. Some ladies who have a desire, verse 7, to teach Torah, but they are new and are not aware of certain things, and they are being misled by others who are teaching them information. And so now they're promulgating that out, and that's a problem. All right, so let's take a look at this. I'm going to put this here, correct some examples of false teaching that was going on in the sense that he brought it to bear. Now, here's a question. The Holy Spirit. Was the text in verse 12 given in order to meet a particular need at Ephesus, which is a very popular teaching, or is it for all assemblies, all time, which is my personal position? Interesting. We can discuss that during the question and answer section. All right, let's do it. The first action word in verse 11 is the same as the last action word in verse 12. That is a Greek structure of note. That's why I've put that there. The meaning, this is a repeat, in the context of this passage's consistent desire for peace without trouble, is not silence, but quietness, peace, the opposite of discord and disruption. The Greek structure is known as an inclusio, where the opening word and the closing are the same word, linking them together. I'm not saying it is, I'm just saying it could be. 11 and 12 could actually be together. Because remember, Paul did not number these verses. We need to remember that. All right, let's look at verse 12 and break it down into its significant parts. I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. What translation might this be? Our favorite. All right. Here we go. I do not permit. The Greek tense is first person singular, present active indicative, which is better translated, I am not permitting. Okay? We're just going to hold that to the side and go to 12b. A woman to teach. Now, that is a problem. Here's why. In other places, and I put the word numerous, Paul has authorized or given permission to women to teach. We've already covered some of those. Women have taught. There is no debate about women being in a teaching position. It has happened. Historical narrative demonstrates that. Okay. But I am not permitting a woman to teach would sound like a conflict. All right. So, here's my question. Is this identifying an action or an office? That is Paul saying, I'm not allowing a woman to fill the office of the teacher? That's a question on the table. And here's three ladies I always like to bring back for the discussion. Priscilla, Chloe, and Junia. We've covered all of these ladies. All right, now, dealing with women and teaching. What does this passage say? How is it then, brethren, when you come together, every one of you... Oh, I'm sorry, that's a mistranslation. It should say every man has a doctrine. But it doesn't say that. It says every one of you has a doctrine. Let things be done in order. And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to men. If you read 2 Timothy 2:2 in the KJV, it says, commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. But the correct translation is, the same commit thou to those who are faithful, who shall be able to teach others also. Interesting. Colossians 3:16, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another as long as you are a man. But my text didn't say that. Titus 2:3. The aged women likewise, being behaviors becoming holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine. Did you know not much wine? That means you can have some. Yes, it's called high-octane grape juice. Not given to much wine, teachers of good things. Okay. And I have to say this, there are others that I can't give at this time because I'm doing them in the final teaching. And I haven't made a case for them yet. So I can't tell you what they are. But they're very significant. And I will come back and remind you of this at the next teaching when we wrap all of this up. All right. Since the evidence is solid that women are authorized to teach generally and specifically, and we have narrative examples, whatever is happening in verse 12 cannot be a blanket, no exception prohibition for the action of teaching. But what about the office of teaching? Well, let's take a look. Ephesians 4. He gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors, teachers. There's a question about the and there. But 1 Corinthians 12:28 says, and God has set some in the church, first apostles, secondarily prophets, thirdly teachers. So here we got teachers as a standalone. And then he says, and by the way, the Greek structure anticipates a negative answer, are all apostles? Nope. Are all prophets? Nope. Are all teachers? Nope. But look what verse 31 says. Covet earnestly the best gifts, unless you're a woman, and then you can't covet squat. But that wasn't in my translation either. Okay, yes, all of these passages, they are not gender specific. So, my question is, would Paul tell women that they should covet all this good stuff when, in fact, they ain't got no hope? Yeah, that's what I thought too. Without question, women are cited as teachers, authorized to be teachers, both generally and specifically, as well as to covet earnestly the office of teacher. So, we need to look at the continuing context of verse 12 for some type of qualification. because we know they can. Now we got to find out why they can't. Now, remember our premise. I urged you when I went into Macedonia, stay in Ephesus so that you might charge some to stop teaching false doctrines. Charge some to stop. Now, here's my question. We're talking about women in verse 12. But has this happened before? Yes, it has. But how come nobody makes an argument about that? Yeah, we're going to shut down them Jewish men. Ooh. Perhaps there's only a class of women that need to be temporarily restrained. This happened with Titus and the Jews from Crete. Let's read about it. There are many unruly and vain talkers and deceivers, especially they of the circumcision from Crete, whose mouths should never be stopped because they're Jewish, who subvert whole houses, teaching things which they ought not for dishonest gain. Yeah, that's what my translation says. What are they teaching? Jewish myths. Yes, Gnosticism affected Judaism too. Commandments of men. But we saw commandments of men recently in Ephesians 2:15, where we saw that the word for destruction was defined as saying that this thing gets moved out and something better gets moved in. Awesome definition. 13, wherefore rebuke them sharply. Why? That they may become sound in the faith. So, have we advanced? No. We are still looking for some type of qualification in verse 12. Because remember, we did 13 and 14 already. You people stop reading ahead. All right. C. I am not permitting women to teach or to have authority. All right, what are we looking for? A qualification for limiting women in a teaching capacity. That's what we're looking for. Got to find something. So here's the Greek word, A-U-T-H-E-N-T-E-O. Translated, have authority. Is that the correct translation? Have authority. Etymology. It's on page 1 at the top of your outline. The etymology of most, if not all, root words is agreed upon by Mr. Etymology himself, Shan Train, along with some others, Little and Scott, and Moulton and Milligan. And they all agree that it started with self-achieving, and then I've put the Greek words there in case you want to chase it out. Let's continue. The sense of the word, the existence in this particular writer of antiquity, and the gloss by this lexicographer leads us to recognize a compound signifying what? By oneself, of one's own initiative, and the second part of the term, which achieves and realizes. This is a two-part word that was put together that's never used anywhere else in the Greek Bible. But it is used in cultural times, okay? And I'm going to give you some examples, okay? Here is his work on the etymology dictionary. Now, of one's own initiative which realizes, I want you to keep that in mind as I tell you some stories. Here's the first story. We're going to talk about corporate America. Let's say that we have a corporation and there is a director, and no, none of this is in your notes. Okay, there is a director and there are 6 assistant directors, and then of course there are employees who operate and do jobs for the director. Now, next week the director is going out of town for a meeting. So the director is going to designate to one of the assistant directors to be in charge for the week. That's reasonable. I've seen it happen before. And then when he comes back, he'll be back in charge. But during the time he's gone, he's going to designate assistant director number 1. You are in charge. That means that he will be directing the other 5 assistant directors, and they will be directing the employees. Okay, that's the responsibility. So, assistant director number six goes to one of the employees and says, I need you to do this. Does assistant number six have the authority to tell that employee to do that? No. Assistant director one was given the authority to tell the employees to do that. But assistant director six did not have that authority given to them. They assumed the authority to act when they didn't have it. Do you see what I'm saying here? All right, let's continue. Family. A couple of weeks ago, during part of our meeting, Carol took some of the children outside and worked with them on a play for trumpets. The parents in here implicitly gave Carol authority over their children, because if they hadn't, then Carol would not have taken the children out there, because she needs to have a level of authority to be able to manage all of these different parents' children in a setting where people can learn. So there's an implicit level of authority given to Carol to do that. If one of the children had said, okay, this is what we're going to do, that person was not authorized to do that unless Carol authorized them. Okay? See what I'm saying? All right. Let's go to Roman slaves and their owners. Generally speaking, a slave owner did not try to manage the slaves of other slave owners. Generally speaking, everybody had their slaves. You have your slaves, and I'm not telling your slaves what to do, and you better not tell my slaves what to do. Generally speaking, that's how it worked with Roman slave owners and slaves. All right? But I'm going to show you a papyrus. It is cataloged as BGU 1208. We've already talked about TLG, which is the Thoris Lingua Graecae, which is a project of the University of Southern California, in which they have input from 600 BC to 1453 every document in existence in Greek into a database so that you can search and find stuff just like I'm going to show you right now. Okay? This document is dated just a little before Paul's time, and it is entitled A Letter from Tryphon to Asclepiades that concerned the matter of ferrying and related payments. I know. You're like, what? What could this possibly have to do with the submission of women? That's a fair question. All right, here we go. It relates an incident when a slave of Asclepiades refused to pay the boatman, Callitus, his boat fare. Wow, they would really laugh at our names, wouldn't they? Joe, Sam, Lee, Phil. How can you have a name with only one syllable? Okay, here's what happened. The boat owner went to the slave and said, give me the money. The slave was given the money to give to the boat owner for the transport of the slave. The slave refused to give the money to the boat owner. All right? So another slave owner, who was not this slave's slave owner, turned to the boatman and said, when we arrive in port, I will personally pay for this slave. That's what took place. Okay? So, everything transpires. Now, what happens? After this is over, this particular slave owner writes an apology to the other slave owner, the one who had the slave on the boat who wouldn't pay. He writes an apology in a letter and says, when I intervene, I exercised self-assumed authority. Because he didn't have the authority to account for that slave. But he exercised self-assumed authority. That's what happened on that boat that day. All right, so what is the Greek word that is in that text? There's the Greek word. Now, what is the Greek word in our text of 1 Timothy 2:12? Pretty close. What's the root of these two Greek words? Exactly the same. Aha. Remember what we're looking at? Of one's own initiative, which realizes. Now, let's talk about Paul. But we're going to cover the whole New Testament. In the New Testament, one has authority or authorized power over another. The word is this word, E-X-O-U-S-I-A, which you've seen before. When you have authorized power, look at this, 69, authority 29, right 2, liberty 1, jurisdiction, this is KJV, every Bible would differ. I'm going to give you some passages so you can see what the word for authority shows up for us. For he taught them as one having authority, not as the scribes. You should be familiar with all these passages. I am a man under authority. When Yeshua was coming to the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came to him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority do you do these things? And who gave you this authority?" Paul had authority from the chief priest to bind all that call on thy name. Whereupon, as I went to Damascus with authority and commission from the chief priest. First Timothy, for kings. We saw this passage. We read it. Kings and for all that are in authority. Paul had all the words he needed for proper authority, but instead used a specific restriction on women by using a verb that means self-assumed authority. This is the qualifying restriction we've been looking for. Since something more universal would conflict both theologically as well as historical. All right, here's how I read it. As soon as he states his temporary restraining order on these women who were promulgating false teachings, he touches on certain specific errors in the next two verses, which we just covered. The first one was, Eve was formed first, but Paul says, Adam was formed first. And then he says, Eve, etc. You've got the chart. It's in your outline. He refutes what the women are teaching. All right. Since he wants them to learn, what did we learn about verse 11? This is not a cultural issue and certainly not a rabbinic issue. This is the issue of God. And he wants ladies to have the opportunity to learn. And then, once they've learned, maybe this temporary restraining order might be lifted. Because now they have a knowledge of the truth. But before, they wanted to teach Torah, but they didn't know it. All right, let's review. I'm not permitting a woman to teach a man with self-assumed authority, but to learn in quietness, peace. Now, this exclusion still allows a woman to teach if she has recognized authority. Who was in Ephesus? Who was specifically left in Ephesus? Priscilla. Who taught Apollos? Priscilla. She was authorized. If he was talking about authorized authority, he would have used a different verb because he used it multiple times throughout his writings. But here, and only here, he chose a completely different word which talks about self-assumed authority. And that would shut down false women teachers from teaching things such as 13 and 14. All right, let's go back. Let a woman learn in quietness, peaceably, submitting to all the truths that they are being taught. For now, I'm not permitting a woman to teach a man with self-assumed authority, but to learn in quietness peaceably. Why? Well, here's some of their errors. However, salvation is still available thanks to Yeshua being born if they continue in the truth. That's verse 15. Okay? Self-assumed authority. One might say that all who teach have been granted authority, but is that really true? I'll tell you an example. Let's look at this assembly right here. There are people in this assembly who at different times, both here in a meeting and out in people's families, in their homes and wherever they are, and on the phone and on Facebook and in email and on their website and on their blog, and they're teaching all kinds of things, and I haven't authorized any of them because nobody came to me and asked me to authorize them. So basically, everybody is doing their own thing here, and it's out there. And that's the reality of the life here. Okay? So, and this one writes books. She didn't ask me to authorize that either. But here's the thing. Certain people were specifically authorized by Paul to teach, and we saw that. But now he's saying that there are certain people who have not been specifically authorized, probably because they're new. That's my guess from 1:7. They have not been authorized. So what he's going to do is I don't want these people teaching yet. And here's the word I'm going to use. They are authorizing themselves. They're teaching error. It's causing people's faith to become shipwrecked. And I want it to stop for now until they can learn in quietness, peaceably. Okay? And we saw this with Crete. While I think this is for Timothy and Ephesus at that time, and I'll tell you why in a moment, I could see this being effective should the need arise in any assembly at any time. If you have people who are new, who are out teaching things that are... Let's say you're teaching divine invitation. Well, that's a problem because we don't support divine invitation here. So if you're going to go out and teach everybody about divine invitation, I'm not going to authorize you to be a teacher in this assembly. Now, can you still do your blog? Yes. Can you do your website? Yes. Can you do your email list? Yes. Can you talk to people when you have them over for Shabbat dinner? Yes. There's nothing I can do about that. But in this assembly, if you start teaching divine invitation, I'm going to shut you down because that's just the way it is. Okay? So, do I think that this was for Ephesus? I think this was for Ephesus because there's nothing in the letter that says that this is for the people. Unlike Philemon, in which it says that I am writing this letter to you and the assembly, that is not in this letter. Nevertheless, I think that the teaching here could be used for assemblies today, were this to become a problem. Okay? So, here's my question. Where do we go from here? We need to see about offices that women can hold. You just saw Ephesians 4 and 1 Corinthians something. I don't remember what it is right now. In which it talked about these offices, and they were not gender specific. Is it 12? 1 Corinthians 12. Okay. So, we need to look at the text in Titus and Timothy that talk about office holding. And that is the last message that deals with women, authority, and teaching. All right? And then we'll wrap all this up. And that will be at the next gathering, and we will review every single thing that we have covered on this from the beginning. Okay? So, my assessment here is that Paul was instructing Timothy to stop the teaching of those who had assumed authority that had not been authorized because they were teaching incorrectly. Let's let them learn first, and then we'll pull the restraint order later. That's what I get out of this text. And what happens with that particular analysis is that it agrees with the Greek word within the culture of the time, in its only occurrence in the New Testament, and does not violate contradiction, Torah, or any other theological argument or narrative story that Paul has taught throughout all his letters. There's no conflict. So if you meet all of those goals, this is worth evaluating. That's my position. And that is the end.